welcome back to another episode of the Authentic Recruiter Podcast. If you are part of the recruitment industry and you believe that authentic recruiters change lives, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Claire Akers. I want to say thanks for tuning in. I am so glad you're here. Let's dive in to the episode.
So we've already covered this a little bit, but just to delve into it a little bit more, let's share some horror stories, shall we? What do you think makes a terrible recruiter?
Relying on email and technology, for me, it's, yes, it plays a part in modern recruitment, but there's nothing more cringeworthy when you get an email that's obviously automated with the wrong name on it, or they haven't read your profile properly. It's really lazy recruitment. Try to think of some specific horror stories.
No, I think I agree. Lazy recruitment drives me insane. I think I could quite easily go out and look for the available CVs myself. I think a really good recruiter will know where to find the gold, and it isn't necessarily just by sticking a job advert out there. I mean, anyone can do that. It's about adding that skill set to it. For me, I think the horror stories around Ed trying to be recruited for a job that is at least 72 roles beneath his current skill level, I think. I mean, that's just shockingly bad and embarrassing. And likewise, we've had candidates in the past who are clearly just not suitable for the role, and I've come out of interviews just going, stop wasting my time. I think anybody who doesn't vet a candidate properly is just wasting the candidate's time, our time, raising hopes, and then shattering them and undermining the confidence. I think we've had somebody come through in the past who was so clearly wrong for the job, and we were very gentle and kind with them, but I could still tell when they left that they could tell that they weren't right for the job. They could tell that it wasn't where they wanted to be or within their skill set, and they left feeling undermined and lacking confidence, and we had a part to play in that, and that made me feel so terrible. Yeah. And actually, that should never have happened.
That's a really good point, actually. I think sales recruiters, I have to say, is definitely a horror story. People who are pushing either clients or candidates to do something that isn't right for their own personal gain. I find that very distasteful.
That is my pet hate. You know, at times when I've run agencies and I've had, you know, teams of 6 to 8 consultants, and I've always said, money, stop, don't ever think about the money. Because when you put the money first, your credibility is flawed right from the start. You just, businesses know how much money they have to make in order that we can all pay our taxes and do the right thing, but you don't need to obsess about it. I don't get this granular obsession with minute by minute, you know, target driven. I think if you're comfortable in your ability to be credible about the industry you're helping to recruit for, you just shouldn't have to worry about the money. It's a loss later to me.
It comes naturally, doesn't it? If you're doing a good job
But people buy quality, you know, there's certain reasons why even very traditional behaviour in our family lines, products, brands, we know, we like, we trust them. There's a sense of value associated with certain things. And, you know, with the certain shops we'll go and shop in, certain cars we'll drive because, you know, we know they're reliable, we know they're trustworthy. Well, you don't make a buying decision either in a nanosecond and just go with, you know, like, who's flagging up something. And I think in recruiters, when we're talking before, then that race to the finish line, you know, and sometimes if clients are in a difficult position where they need to fill a vacancy fast, they can almost contribute massively to that behaviour by going away from the people who have a trusted relationship and just think they just happen to have the right CV at the right time. And although I get that,
it's tempting.
It is tempting, but it kind of just unravels all of the good work, I think.
Yeah. I think it depends on, it all again comes back to values and authenticity. So if I think it's very obvious when recruitment consultants are driven by the money, and
you can usually tell by the suits.
You can tell by the suits, and you can also tell by the rate they drop on you from the get go. So whether it's starting, you start talking about rate negotiation before you even talk about the candidates, and our culture and the business and how we're going to work together.
Yeah, whether there's a values fit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there are some recruitment consultants out there that are just about the percentage. They are just about the money. And generally speaking, they're the ones that don't email you back. They're the ones that, when you send your CV into, as a candidate, which I have been, you know, a candidate in the past, sent my CV in for a job that on paper, I'm like, well, yes, absolutely, I can do all of those things. And I've never heard back. What's wrong? Why am I not being even considered for that role?
Well, yeah, and that's an interesting point, Anna, because I think as well, the way that the industry stacks up is that the client is king, and the candidate can often get short thrift or almost forgotten about the process until the point where an unscrupulous recruiter will think, I can make money from that transaction. And that's basically, if that's their fundamental kind of thought process, then that's what's caused an issue in the recruitment industry, because they're not getting to know people, and it doesn't have to be instant.
Yeah,
it's this obsession with bums things
on
having
seats.
To be
it,
yes,
yeah,
yeah,
bums
which is
on seats,
which is always flawed.
First is actually getting value from the recruitment process. So obviously, in a business of 30 people, one more person makes a huge impact on our culture. So we're very careful about who comes in. I imagine that recruiting in a much larger organisation, where actually you need 30,000 people and your recruitment intake is thousands a year, I think that environment is a very different environment. So I think it depends on what the recruiting principles are, what the recruitment drivers are, and actually what your values are as a recruiter, and how those two fit together. And if the two are crossing over, so if we've got a volume driven recruiter coming to talk to us, where we're much about cultural fit and actually quality and getting the right person in, that's never going to work. So I do think there's different types of recruitment at different levels.
I've had a manager before, I'm just remembering a horror story now, who pushed me to put a candidate forward to a certain client because the percentage in terms of our terms agreement was higher. And that was the sole reason they were pushed as a match, rather than, you know, there's anything more important than the match.
It's people's lives.
Yeah.
That's just so bad. That's somebody's life.
It's
somebody's job.
It?
It's almost like the money overtakes everything else and reason and remembering what you're actually there for. And I think you have such potential to do good in your role. And I think that actually some of the behaviours that we see in recruiters that are not necessarily about cultural fit really undermine that process and really undermine the value that you
That's
really
what we get upset about.
it is
so hard. I mean, you alluded to this earlier, Mel, but coming up 4 years we've been going on, hand on heart, I've never made a single cold call in the whole time I've been trading. And I'm lucky enough that it is mostly through reputation that we pick up business these days, which is lovely, but it's very much my personal challenge is to get in front of clients to demonstrate that, because you come in with such a millstone of the reputation of the industry first and foremost.
Yeah, it's just difficult to differentiate yourselves.
I think as well, thinking, you know, about what makes a good recruiter is somebody who I have on record many times said to clients, which I find a little bit weird when it comes out of my mouth, is to say, you're only 50% of the success I can create. That's not meant to be horrible to the client, but clearly if I don't equally have an incredibly good candidate, it's a match. It's, you know, 50-50 meets to, and then it's 100%. But, you know, for me, it's, I wish clients, and I only work with good clients, but it's the post-interview stuff that's as important as the pre. So what I find a little frustrating sometimes is that, say, a client will say that person's not relevant, but then the feedback's so incredibly poor. So you're stuck between a rock and a hard place trying to give your candidates some really good feedback, but if the client's giving you only really thin, sketchy details, it's very hard to make that candidate feel valued through the process. So I think one of the reasons why good recruiters do well is it's about employer branding for the employer. So as you mentioned before, Anna, it's if we're in a situation where we can be discussing your brand and your company, we need to be on the same page. You know, we need to be able to talk almost not as if we're you, but we need to be able to hold a reasonably robust conversation around the USPs of working for the data shed and what that means both culturally and behaviour wise. But I feel like the whole process gets so driven on the actual hire that the after bit gets a bit...
It's just good manners. Feedback is just good manners, mm-hmm. and actually providing constructive feedback, I think, if the candidate has had the has put the effort into preparing for the interview, and certainly we ask quite a lot of our candidates mm-hmm. when they come in, the first meeting is always an interview and the second one is always a presentation. Mm-hmm. If you're asking somebody to put that kind of time, effort and energy into something, then the least you can do is spend 10 minutes on the phone giving decent quality feedback that they can then build on.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I think this is quite a good segue into the next question, which is how to get the most from your recruiter. So in terms of relationships that you've had with your clients, where do the really good relationships happen, and how do people get the best out of you guys in the process?
Exclusivity, I'd say, is the number one tip for getting both the time commitment and trusted advisor relationship. Mm-hmm. It's about a partnership. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I've got one client who we have an exclusive relationship. They share with me their projected hires throughout the year, so I know what kind of people are looking out for speculatively. So if I see them, I can go, they would fit perfectly into your culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really working as that brand ambassador for mm-hmm. them, almost as an extension of the company, mm-hmm. really. Talent manager, brand ambassador, trusted advisor, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And it's about communication as well, then being able to share the stuff we're doing well, but also mm-hmm. the stuff that we could perhaps work on or do better or help them with.
Okay.
Wholeheartedly agree. I've had a recent experience of working to hire graduate software developers in quite big numbers, so 19, and really myself and the client plotted the entire process from how people would be initially, you know, what the telephone screen would be, then the criteria to go through to first interview, then we co-wrote an assessment day and we delivered it. So at every point of the recruitment cycle, we worked as a team,
yep.
and nothing was held back from me. So there wasn't anything that I, you know, that clients were not being completely transparent about. We wrote the job description together. They were heavily looking for advice from myself about how to attract, engage and recruit graduate talent. Mm-hmm. They were very open and said, you know, we've tried it before, Mel, and to be honest with you, we failed. So we're here to ask you, could you help us through this process? So I think for me as well, it's remembering what you're paying for, because getting back to that obsession about the literal bum on the seat. When people say to me, recruiters get money for old rogue, it's really easy, you send a CV. That's not the reality of our role at all. What you're paying for essentially is time.
Yep.
Like most other professional services. And the bits that people don't see are the lengthy exposure you have to the candidate, mm-hmm. which actually just reinforces how confident you feel about them. When you spend the time with them, you know this person really quite well. I mean, it gets funny in my world, obviously, because the recent graduates. So the kind of the coaching I do alongside yep. the kind of generic recruitment skills, you know, is really, really rewarding. But I just basically think that, you know, it is open, honesty, transparency. Mm. We're not sat here saying, you know, I mean, lots of people use the contingency model, and it is okay, but just don't set recruiters up against one another, because I think that you're storing up trouble.
Yeah, it's a race to the bottom then, really, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm. And how do you attract a terrible recruiter?
Pit them against each other.
Yeah.
Don't value the service that they can provide. It's a sure way to attract a bad service.
Yeah.
If you're not looking for value, if for example if you're comparing a recruiter on price, then of course you're not going to get the best service.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah, I think it's you know, the thing is that if you don't interview them in the same way you would your candidates, like, I wouldn't dream of working with somebody if I didn't know them, if I didn't know what sets them apart, if I didn't know what they valued in terms of what they could bring. And I find that people will sometimes very knee-jerk reaction. People are generally under pressure to find a hire. And so it just reinforces that speed of delivery. But, you know, this is people, and people... do things that none of us expect sometimes, and people, you know, have different value systems, and it's not a thing to be rushed, really. And you should, as a recruiter, you should be able to say to your clients wholeheartedly, do you know, it's a bit of a struggle, this hire, trying to find this hire. It's really difficult, you know, I've gone to all my usual places and it's really tough right now. Why can't people just have honest conversations? Yeah. You know, I did a round table event quite recently about, you know, finding good recruitment businesses, or what, you know, how to find a good recruiter. And all the clients around the table were being really open and honest and saying how much they struggled. And I kind of said, you know, this is interesting because you've been really open and you're telling me how much you're struggling, but you expect us not to struggle. And like anybody else, nothing's infinite.
It's not magic.
No,
you can still have work.
Yeah, it's really hard work. And I think the thing that people ultimately pay for using a recruitment business is it's just the amount of time that validates those talent pools and how we basically keep them warm through constant engagement. Yeah. And not throwaway engagement. We talk to people regularly. People are open with us, people are candid with us because we encourage it and we ask for it. I tell anyone I'm recruiting for a business, you need to be very candid with me. Don't sit there thinking the stuff that you feel like you can't say.
Yeah.
Because everything comes out in the end. So you might as well just get it on the table.
Get it told.
Yorkshire grit.
Absolutely.
That is it for today. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if we're not already, let's connect on LinkedIn. See you next time.